Okay, I think we're ready here to greet, welcome Lee Bryant. Lee heads up Head Shifts in London. He can probably say more about it, but a company working with social software, and as opposed to a lot of the companies working with social software to do it today, really has actual experience of several years of implementing an organization, etc. So we have an interesting topic about the social fabric. So welcome, Lee.
Thank you. That's better. Okay, well, thank you for coming along. This is not rocket science by any means, because we focus on practical applications. So what we do is probably a lot less exciting than some of the ideas that have been flying around. But nonetheless, it might be of interest. And certainly, I think we can get some value out of discussing some of the ideas with you. So the subject of the talk was weaving the social fabric, language, meaning, and tags. And we're all familiar with where we stand at the moment with social tagging. Tremendously exciting development in social software and online social networks, pioneered by Delicious, Flickr, latterly by Technorati, and new instances of this are emerging all the time, like TagCloud, which I just spotted yesterday. So I would characterize the current state of play as being kind of out there in the wild. It's largely consumer-facing rather than within organizations. And we're dealing with a fairly simple, open, flat structure of folksonomies or social tags or themes or keywords or whatever you want to call them. And there's nothing wrong with that at all, but I'd like to look at how we take this forward, because I think already people that use things like Technorati tags have discovered that unless you have a very specific tag, like Reboot 7, for example, things kind of get lost, because the tags that emerge out of the single tag soup that they have are things like this: diary, entertainment, computers, 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 comics, etc. So it's fairly fairly simple stuff that tends to emerge. So without boring you to death, I just wanted to go back to some basics about how we communicate and really look at the way that tags might play a role in that process. So as far as I understand it, to communicate we need a shared situation like we have now. We're all in the same room, we're at the same conference. We need a degree of shared perception, which means that our brains need to be wired up on a neural level in a relatively similar way, and I think that's certainly the case for most of us. We also need some kind of shared cognition, so the ability to conceptualize what we see, to apply language and categories to that. And then obviously we need a shared language. Now, we don't all share a first language here, but actually we all share a first or a second language here. The conference is mostly in English. And so really it's that third point on the slide, which is categorization and conceptualization, that I think is relevant here to the discussion of social tags. I went to a very interesting lecture by a guy called Professor Luke Steels, who works at the Sony Computer Science Lab in Paris. And he's doing some really interesting work with artificial intelligence, and looking at the way software agents and robots can actually negotiate language between them. So he does an experiment which involves two software agents looking through video cameras at a shared set of shapes on a whiteboard. And what they do is they just throw out terms, and then they iterate rapidly until they actually develop some kind of common understanding between them. One of the interesting things that these experiments uncovered was that this idea of polysemy, you know, having multiple words for the same concept. You start off having lots of different words for a particular concept, but very, very rapidly through iteration, you get down to a very limited number of words in use at a particular time. And actually, although I just kind of mocked that graph up, the data does follow pretty much a power law curve, which is kind of interesting to me, because if you look at this in a political context or a socio kind of cultural context, then you start to ask the question, okay, well, who leads this process? Who defines the words that we we use for particular concepts. And if you look at the work of Noam Chomsky and other people, they focus quite heavily actually on how language is determined. And Noam Chomsky typically quotes examples like the word terrorist, or to give it its proper pronunciation these days, tourists. That word is applied by politicians, but the same, equally valid terms can be freedom fighter, insurgent, a whole host of other things. It entirely depends on the context, and it entirely depends on the purpose for which you're applying this term. So I'm very interested, actually, in the way that we apply these terms and the way that this power law curve works. When we get down to just a handful of terms for a concept, what does that mean? Does that limit our understanding, and does that also place us under the control of somebody who invented those words? Okay, so what? If I think back to what got me first involved in the internet, I used to work in the political sphere, and I used to do lots of campaigning work around issues where the mainstream media, having defined a particular issue or a set of issues, had exercised a very high degree of control over a particular situation. And my job was to try and break out of that through combination of lobbying, writing, publishing, and so on, to try and enable people to self-represent their issues, to describe their own issues in their own terms, rather than be forced into this very, very narrow funnel of an acceptable set of kind of consensual language that mainstream media would use for that particular issue. So, and that's really what turned me onto the internet, because somebody showed me, the apocryphal early beta release of Netscape, and I instantly realized that actually, rather than focus all my efforts on the BBC, AP, AFP, and the major news agencies, we could just focus our efforts on building our own networks horizontally, using our own language, using our own terms, and actually we could reach people much more effectively through that method. And that's what we've tried to do ever since. So I think the dynamics of categorization, the dynamics of language in social tagging are important for these reasons. A, we need to promote self-representation so that people can describe themselves in their own terms. Language has a power, and labels have an extremely powerful role in society. We need to understand each other. We all have languages, we all have domains of knowledge, and then perhaps we all use a bunch of terms and words and so on. Bringing those together, bridging the gaps between them, mapping the relationships between them, I think is a key principle if we want to develop any form of mutual understanding. And finally, the kind of slightly highfalutin political language is that control of the way that you represent yourself is in fact also protection against what Gramsci and Chomsky and people describe as hegemonic discourse. In other words, if areas of our society and areas of our social life are being narrowed down through language, then control of the terms and a degree of diversity of those terms is in fact a form of protection. So those are some of the reasons why I'm particularly interested. So all I want to do is look at four case studies that we've worked on, very, very briefly. Again, not rocket science, but they each illustrate one aspect of the way in which I think social tagging might develop in the future, and some of the uses that we can already put the technique to. And I want to do that really as a precursor to seeing if you guys have any other great ideas which my company can exploit commercially. Ha ha ha. That was in my notes. That was the underlying subtext. I shouldn't have read that bit out. So, first of all, we were very lucky to be asked to do a kind of an experimental prototype recently by the BBC, which was looking at how they might use social tagging to enable users to bookmark BBC news stories, how they might use that to create user-driven related stories rather than have editors determine what stories are related to what stories, and also it enables people to kind of overcome the BBC's own formal categorization or classification schema and really organize stories in any way that they choose. And we extended that slightly by looking at how through tags we could integrate with external services like Flickr, Delicious, and Technorati. So What we did, if this classic BBC News page is probably many of you will be familiar, there's a piece up here, this tags box, and that's really the bit that we focused on. That was part of the prototype. I should emphasise that this is nothing to do with the BBC, as there's a sign at the top saying it's what's called a proxy page that's pulling in BBC stories and then doing something to them. So I was going to show you a very, very short screencast about the way that we implemented this, and then perhaps you know, what we're driving at will become clearer. So if you have a look up here, this is a page aggregating tags. I click on Zimbabwe, I can see links from Delicious, blog posts and so on, and I can see stories that people have tagged with the term Zimbabwe, among them this podcasting story. You can see the tags up here. You know, you click on podcasting, you go back to that list of your tag stories and other people's tag stories. And then if you want to change the way that's organized, you can type in Mugabe, add the tag, and that's added for you. You've effectively bookmarked the story under that term. And if you want to go back and view all your tags, you can see the tags that you're using. Click on Iraq and see stories that you've tagged and stories that other people have tagged under the term Iraq. And then perhaps link out to external blog posts, photos, etc., etc. So, fairly simple stuff, but nonetheless, I think it does illustrate how I can put my evil plan into action and overcome those political issues that so exercised me many years ago. You know, this, I think, is quite interesting, and if more major news organizations were to deploy this, not, you know, our manifestation, but anyone can do this, then I think it overcomes, you know, a great limiting factor. And I think, you know, it's part of the kind of the remix culture that we're talking about here at Reboot. I want to organize stories in my own way. Maybe I tag stories in a particular way that the BBC don't agree with, but that would be good for me. And so that's what we're aiming for there. So I think that's an example of how we'd like to see social tagging kind of extended into news and media. We've also looked at local issues. We set up a social enterprise in what's regarded as a kind of relatively poor area of London called Brixton many years ago, about 8-9 years ago now. And we did various kind of online community work with the project. It still goes. We still do training and we do all kinds of other things. Now, the problem we had years ago was we would build an online community site and we'd have to really force people to put content in because there was not a critical mass of users locally, and people just really hadn't got the time to faff around with content management systems and so on to just publish on this system. So we thought about that, and when the time arrived where we figured actually there is enough critical mass of users in the area who are blogging, who are writing on sites, there's enough aggregated services like Google News and other things, we thought, okay, well, let's turn this around and let's try and solve the problem purely through aggregation. So what we did was we built an aggregator that pulls in local news, stories that mention issues relating to Brixton from Google, from the BBC. We pull in the output of the police from their website. We pull in the output of the local council. And as we built their document management system, we also pull in their documents as well from within inside the council, and so far no one's had a problem with that. And then we pull in blogs by geo-URL, by search term, and so on. And what we created was something like this. It's just very, very simple kind of aggregator. You'll see you can just click on blogs or local info or news or whatever. And occasionally what you'll see is the long finger points to two related. So what we're doing is we're pulling in all the text from all these services into a kind of a keyword vector space, just looking at correlation of keyword terms between items and then deriving linkages, which otherwise don't exist, between stuff. So what we're getting, which is quite interesting, is the local council pumps out some rubbish about a consultation about how they're going to kind of lay waste to an area of Brixton and so on. Instead of just taking their word for it, we can also, you know, pull in stuff from the blogs and see what people are talking about. We can pull in Google News, BBC News, and so on to see what you know, local media, for example, are talking about. And that is kind of interesting. It's interesting in itself as an aggregator. It's not something we've promoted or made a big noise about. Because the hidden agenda of this project actually was just to build up a body of content over a year and then analyze the whole body of content and really see what we can learn about local issues and local priorities from a year's worth of content. So I'll just show you a little bit of this. I mean, it's fairly self-evident. There are blogs. We click on news and we're going to see stories that relate to Brixton. We click on local info, we've got council stuff, we've got stuff from local music venues and so on. And then click on links and we just pull in the tag Brixton from Delicious. And there are more and more people actually using that tag now, thankfully. And then the other thing that we do is we add a layer of comments on top. So everything becomes an object in our system and people can add comments about, you know, a bad bus journey or whatever it is they want to do. So far, not rocket science-ish. But the thing is, we've got this wonderful kind of keyword vector space that describes what people are talking about in Brixton. We pulled out, just before I came here, we had a look at it and pulled out, there's about 18,000 main keywords which we pulled out. And we listed here some of them who range between about 100 and about 650 occurrences. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, in the UK, and I know in other countries as well, there's a drive towards, you know, increasing consultation with members of the public, with citizenry, or whatever. But it's always done on the government's own terms. So they define the scope of the consultation, they define the issues, and then they put it out and say, what do you think? And it's like, well, you know, I don't know what I think, really. Why don't you kind of read my stuff instead of me reading your stuff? And so that's kind of what we're hoping to do. We'd rather build these aggregators, plug that content into local government, into, you know, other organizations, because that seems a fairer way of doing it. They've got the resources to read all this stuff, whereas individual citizens have got much better things to do than read government documentation. So that's kind of tangentially related to social tagging, because what we're doing is we're actually deriving tags from content through textual analysis. And then we're trying to use that as a way of defining the themes and the issues which are of interest to a particular community, and then feeding those back to the powers that be in a way that we hope can influence them. So that's a second use of social tagging that we think may be seen more in the future. A third is the negotiation of meaning. We do lots of work in the mental health field in the UK, and mental health is characterized by an extreme diversity of perspectives, to say the least. Some people might say schizophrenia is a chemically induced condition. Some might say it's a social condition. Some might say it's a gift from God and should be celebrated. That's the range of opinions and language that exists within the mental health field. We built this kind of national knowledge sharing network for mental health in the UK, in England actually, not the UK. And one of the issues we had there was the classic one of, okay, you know, let's sit down and define a taxonomy. And we said, well, no, there's not much point doing that. We can agree on some basics like regions, you know, where the towns are, but beyond that, we're kind of fighting among ourselves. And really, we shouldn't seek to impose one particular view on this community. What we should try and do is give them, you know, a balance between some useful top-down metadata and some kind of emergent bottom-up metadata so that they can actually, you know, have their own subdomains, they can talk about their own issues on their own terms and so on. So that's what we did. We kind of combined, you know, classic top-down metadata with bottom-up tagging. And it was a very interesting exercise. Basically, one of the first things that emerged was that the organizations involved came to be aware of whole communities which they'd neglected or didn't really know about. So one of the first things was that there was a fairly strong lesbian and gay group who started to own tags relating to those issues. And they became very, very active early adopters of the system to such an extent that they've raised their profile within the organization substantially, and they've kind of protected their space on this tool, which was quite an interesting thing to watch. But also what you see is, if you look over there on the left-hand side, you'll see the basic top-down kind of classification regimes that people agree on. So we agree on what the services are we offer. We agree on what the programs are. We know roughly what the regions are. But what's happened is that people have been generating themes and tags that nobody really considered in the formal taxonomy, and we've been promoting some of those upwards to have a formal status within the organization, which is quite an interesting flow between the bottom up and the top down. So here, if you click on mental health services, you see your standard kind of N-level, you know, taxonomic structure. Click on clinical services and you can see content organized under that term, as you might expect, and there are subsections within there as well. But you click on general themes, and that's where you can see the fairly standard, you know, Flickr delicious style, 50 most recent or 50 most popular, and then you click on things like BME issues, black and minority ethnic issues, and you can see a whole bunch of stuff that's organized there that's not in the formal taxonomy. Do a search on themes. Problem is, obviously, there's lots of words being used. So I mistyped a word. I put in menthol and did a search. And what we've done is we've applied just some basic Soundex stuff to try and cast a wide net and bring some of those terms together. So you can see menthol will suggest mental, mentality, mental health, monthly report, mental capacity. And if I see, well, there's too many terms here, then I can just merge some of those themes. So that gradually, you know, you're not imposing structure, but you're just corralling words together so that you're creating a more meaningful path through the data for people. And that, you know, again, it's been done before, it's been done elsewhere, but I don't think there are that many instances of it being done within this kind of network, which is traditionally perceived as being fairly backwards from a technological point of view. And we've been running this now for about a year and a half. So again, we're building up a fairly rich corpus of data about the terms, about the journey that these terms travel, about the way they're generated, the way they're merged, and so on. And we'll try and study that over time and see what we can learn from that. So I think, for me, this is part of a drive towards negotiating shared meaning within an extremely diverse network. You know, we've got people now who have some tools to actually look at the relationships between terms, and also have a degree of control over the development of those terms. So we're quite interested in that as an approach, and again, it's something we'll be exploring, and I hope others might consider too. Finally, number four, negotiating language. This is actually a case study. It's another health-related case study. A social enterprise in England was funded by the NHS to actually go and get really kind of real from the ground feedback on NHS services. At the moment, it's again plagued by the kind of consultation feedback process, which doesn't really elicit real information from people, because if you ask for feedback, people tend to give you what they think is feedback. So they're kind of censoring themselves and structuring it in a particular way. They're not telling you a story, and really what they want is for people to tell them a story. So, what we looked at was a way in which we could try and take totally unstructured stories, derive some keywords, some themes, and so on from those stories, and then learn and then associate those keywords with real hard and fast taxonomies which the NHS understands. So they have very, very managed structured data for conditions, for services, for the structure of their own services, which is kind of a four-level thing. But, you know, we would never, ever want to expose that to normal people because they would just run away. So that's the process. It's basically unstructured data. We try and derive some keywords from it, and then we attach those keywords to structured data nodes. And then we say to the user, is that what you meant? And if it isn't, then fine, they can restate it. But if it is, then we've learned something about the connection between their language and our language. And what we do is we build up tag clouds next to each of these structured nodes so that we can cope with variations in language, we can cope with colloquial language, we can cope with the fact that people call a heart, a ticker, you know, various other things in different contexts. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to learn their language and actually structure ours accordingly. So that's the goal there. And so it's kind of, again, it's a slightly different use of tagging that people are used to, but actually it is still social tagging, because a word that I put in here, let's say ticker, as a you know, synonym for heart, If I say ticker here and the system learns that, then that term is then available and even suggested back to other users, you know, at the other side of the loop in relation to cardiology. So that's the it's actually a kind of launching in September. It's a prototype right now, but the basic structure of the site is obviously very simple. You either share your story or you find patient feedback either by where you live, postcode, geodata, etc., or by keywords. So I've got a little bit of a screencast here as well. Searching for information about bones. Do a search, ignore the prototype, developer notes, and five nearest services to you based on your postcode for orthopedics, bones and joints, etc. You can see feedback, you can see opinions, you can click through and it will bring in all the data the NHS has about the service. That's fairly self-evident. When you come to share your story, it's simple and structured stuff. We don't need to know much context about it in order to derive structured information from it. It's going to suggest back to you, was that about heart, cardiology, angioplasty, and was it about King's College Hospital, London? We ask you another question, again with very little structure, why did you go there? And you can describe that in any terms that you like. And then the only extra thing we need to make that data that we can use is just give us your name or your nickname. We don't need you to register or fill in stuff, but if you just give us something that we can personalize that with, then we'll take that as data. And then having fed that in, you can do other stuff, see what other people are saying, rate the service, etc., etc. Now the screencast doesn't do it justice. I would love to show you the database diagrams, but that wouldn't be the most interesting thing. But essentially, that's all we're doing. We're taking unstructured language, we're analyzing that for terms that we understand, we're linking that to nodes in a structured vocabulary, and then we're learning from those words. So we're building a growing tag cloud around each node in that structured vocabulary that other people can come along and use at a later date if they so choose. And we hope that this is just a more real way of gathering feedback and information from users, rather than saying, here's a form, tell us what you think we want to know, which is what tends to happen with structured feedback and consultation. So that's something, again, we're very interested to see how that works. Obviously, we're hoping to have a huge corpus of data to analyze with this one. But I think it has got applications in other areas, and it's another use of the ideas behind social tagging. So, where do we go from here? We started by looking at these kind of, you know, quite brilliant. These, you know, I should say, I imply no criticism at all of any of these services, because they've made a real breakthrough, to my mind, in social software and how we think of online social networks. And I'm very grateful to all these services for doing that. But where do we go from here? How do we move beyond simple, flat kind of tag clouds? If I had the answers to that, I'd kind of carry on for another 20 minutes or so. I don't. But the one suggestion I do have is something that we're doing within organizations, which is what we're trying to do is kind of escape this dead zone of taxonomies and formal classifications that many organizations feel they have to have. We work with kind of legal firms, professional services firms, public sector, other organizations, all of them have gone through this reflex. You know, just as large blue chip corporates reach a time in their lives when they feel a need to give $5 million to Siebel or to any other ERP vendor and then sack the people that made that decision. So other organizations get to this stage in their life where they say, we need to stop everything, sit down and spend a month arguing about words in a taxonomy, and then it will go on our website and people will understand it. And more often than not, it's purely internal language, you know. I was almost going to use the fuck word there, because you get points for that here, I'm told. But that's not the case. You know, as Clay Shirky might say, you know, ontologies are overrated because they don't get you laid, therefore they don't fit his definition of social software. And as Doc might say, you know, fuck the fucking tax of fucking onomy, like, etc. So that's basically our pitch when we go into organizations. Only we do it without the swear words in most cases. And what we say to them is, okay, you've got all this kind of stuff down here, data stores, document management systems, knowledge management systems, blah-de-blah-de-blah-de-blah. That's all fine. What we want is to liberate your people from this matrix and enable them to have nothing to do with any of that except via feeds. So we work with organizations to expose all of this stuff on a granular level as individual feeds, ideally going as far as exposing search APIs as well, so that people can run a search on a particular query and that search can be exposed as an RSS feed or Atom feed or whatever. So having done that, really all we want to do is give people a very, very lightweight kind of social software interface onto this stuff, where they have an aggregator, they define the things they're interested in, they pull out the feeds, they have a, you know, kind of composite feed that they've selected from all these different sources. In terms of how they make sense of all this stuff together, obviously weblogs and group weblogs in particular are fantastic as, you know, sense-making networks for a particular group or a project or an initiative. And then when they need to move into kind of action mode, well, there's a wiki. And, you know, you can actually co-write, you can co-produce stuff on the wiki. That also shares the same tagging as, you know, as you can imagine, and those tags feed back. So for the users, it gives them a way of not having to mess with their minds by accessing, you know, formal document management systems or CMS systems or SharePoint. For God's sake, SharePoint. I mean, you know, unbelievable. But for the organization, what it does, we hope, is it brings this stuff to life. Because, you know, people talk about the social life of information. Well, information doesn't have much of a social life if it's buried at the bottom of a database. You know, it just sits there, and it could be the most valuable thing you've ever learned, or it could be totally worthless. You never know, because you don't bring it out to play. You don't put it into a context. You don't connect it with people and do stuff with it. So for the organization, there is also a benefit, which is that they get information about how their stuff is used, and they get information about how people think of it, what their perceptions are, and you know, how they want to access it. So that's our contribution to the kind of future ideas bit. But if there's any time for discussion or Q&A, I'd be really interested, you know, purely from a commercial point of view, you understand, to hear your ideas on how we can do this stuff better in the future. So that was it. Thank you very much.
Lee, thanks for that. That was very interesting. This probably won't be helpful to you, but I noticed all your examples seemed public sector or a third sector examples, and I'm thinking about the side conversation we had about, I think, a shared desire to bring down the market research industry. This seems like a very powerful way to help companies bypass a lot of clumsy focus groups and have much richer direct feedback from their customers. Surely there must be opportunities there, and I'm also thinking there's just a very interesting theme for me about getting out of definition wars. I think a lot of the arguments I see on blogs are people endlessly trying to wrestle down the definition of what a word is and lecturing us about what a word means, and I see you offering us a chance to kind of bypass those definition wars by allowing us to make our own meanings and somehow have a system that doesn't impose a definition on us but responds to, in some word, I haven't got an articulate word for it, in some way different from laying down the law to people.
Yeah. In terms of market research, yeah, let's go get them. They don't know what they're doing, so let's give them a clue. That would be good. That would be fun. And in terms of the definition thing, I think it's important to recognize that there are contexts in which structured language is very important. So there are many areas of science, health, and other things where, you know, you do want a degree of control over language. But in many cases, that's not the case. And basically, we are all sheep in terms of, you know, our language development. If you look at theories of language development, you'll see that, you know, we kind of take what's given to us. You know, what they teach us at school, what they show us on the TV, you know, what our leaders say, etc. We do tend to internalize a lot of this language. And I think just the ability to kind of throw that back and redefine things is a healthy thing in a variety of contexts.
Yeah, I think some of the stuff that you've mentioned here touches on an important distinction that I think Jimbo Wales made yesterday for Wikipedia. He said that the community that Wikipedia had built, he wanted to make it very clear that this was an actual community of people in an actual conversation. There was no system there. It wasn't like a rating. There was no rating system. There's nothing statistical or mathematical or anything like that about it. And it seems to me that at least some of the concepts you're... It seems to me that the reason tagging is useful is, as we say, it's because it's close to language.
Yep.
And as soon as you start applying these fixed taxonomies, you're entering into just, you know, a rating system. The last example you had seemed to turn quickly into some kind of suck rule o-meter for healthcare.
Yeah, kind of, because it was a bit of kind of...
Aren't you kind of killing the language part of the equation?
To be fair, that was only a part of the system. So that was, you saw the ratings page where you aggregate people's ratings about a service. There's a lot more of the kind of the language sharing stuff going on in there, we hope. But I agree, that's a potential danger, and I'm personally more interested in the kind of negotiated language, negotiated meaning aspect of this than I am in the, you know, people who bought this also bought this, or, you know, I think it's a 4 out of 5 kind of approach. So I would agree with that.
From a political point of view, how do you think local communities like that one in London, how do the politicians respond to that? Because I'm a politician and I'm a software guy, and I'm very interested in how tagging in communities can develop that community, because people can learn from each other. I mean, down the street, people can sort of, we can rebuild local communities.
Sure.
But how do you think that can develop?
I don't know. It's kind of happening with bloggers, you know, already. I mean, I subscribe to a number of tags, and so pretty much anything people write on those tags, I take. And that's put me in contact with people I didn't know. It's found common links between people. And also, it's the correlation stroke coincidence of tags, which is interesting. If I find somebody with 3 or 4 tags, which are all interests of mine, then it's like, wow, you know, you share multiple interests. We have a lot in common. So I think what's happening now with bloggers, I hope will happen with real people later on. Not just, you know, bloggers are real people, of course. I know that. But, you know, non-geeks, non-techies, whatever you want to call them. Civilians, I refer to them as civilians. So I think civilians will do that too. But I think what you've got to overcome is actually some of our language. You know, the problem with the tools we build is the language we apply. So, for example, Wiki, you know, every time I stand up in the middle of a presentation and it's called a Wiki. It's like, oh, shit, you know. Okay, well, it's the Hawaiian word for quick, and it was from a bus, and this guy saw the bus, and people are just like, you know, what are you talking about? Seriously. And I find it a real barrier. So I think if we can do this and give people an understanding of actually what's going on with tagging without saying it's social tagging, you know, or do you know what I mean? Then I think we'll make it easier for them to adopt it. We just kind of bake it into things, you know, and let people use it. And maybe they'll use it differently, I don't know. But I think it would be nice to think that a degree of community cohesion can develop through use of tags.
I'm with the Central Library here in Copenhagen, and I'm really excited about the possibilities that I can see for accessing catalog records through this software. Do you know of any libraries using that?
I don't personally, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if they are, because, I mean, the limitations of Dewey Decimal are well known. You know, the limitations of conventional categorization systems for libraries are very well known. It's the social aspect that's important. It's actually not anything else. It really is the fact that, you know, if I've gone in to look for a book and I've searched for these 10 terms and then I've found the book and I've said, actually, it relates to these 3 terms, fantastic. You know, I'm leaving a trail that other people can follow, whether it's because they share language, concepts, interests, whatever. I think that's really, really important. And it's a good point, actually. I think I'll do a little bit of research and see if that is being used in libraries.
And the last question here.
Hi, Lee. It's probably a million-dollar question, but how do you actually...
Thank you very much. I'll give you change if you like.
How do you actually convince your clients to take this bottom-up and not the top-down approach? Now, this could actually apply to blogging. It could apply to corporate blogs. It could apply to so many, you know, of the social tools that we're talking about and the social media we're talking about. But how do you get them to work around and you know, work around this whole culture that is top down into a bottoms up kind
I think
of approach?
Where we start is with things that they know and we know don't work. So there are a number of companies who do things that they know that just don't work. You know, it's like enterprise systems, for example. You know, go in and sit down and talk about ROI, you know, on an enterprise knowledge management system from the 1990s or something. They're all going to, you know, you can see it in their eyes. They want to be freed from it, but they just can't make that step because they paid too much money for it or whatever. So if you can say, look, you know, keep what you have, don't get fired, you know, don't admit that you did something wrong, but let's build on top of that. Then, and if you convince them that it's cheaper, it's faster, and it does add value to what they've got already, then I think that, in our experience, that tends to work.
Okay, Lee Bryan, folks.
Thank you.